This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everybody, to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen here. A big NBA day coming up. We're going to recap the Western Conference final game last night. We'll be previewing Pacers-Knicks tonight. Alex Bruth is going to join us for more of that as well on the Progressive Guest Line. We're going to talk baseball strikeout props. We'll be talking baseball, just the baseball slate. A lot of day games going on today. And we got news in the NFL from the Rules Committee. So a lot going on there. But Nick, starting off, lead story has to be the Thunder dominating the second half against the Timberwolves. Now, they trailed by 4 points at halftime and pulled away to win by 26. Still a 10-point game, though, with like four minutes left. And it's just those last 5 minutes were just crazy.
Yeah, you know, part of the reason that we leaned toward the under in this game last night, Jeff, is I thought there was a reasonable chance that at least one team, if not both, would come out a little bit tight. And once again, that team was the Thunder, right? I mean, we saw it in game seven against Denver. We saw it in game one of that Nuggets series. And, you know, OKC, despite being, you know, the team that had played more recently, you didn't really worry about any rust factor for the Thunder. I thought they struggled quite a bit in the first half. And, you know, we got our answer immediately to the question of, you know, will Julius Randle continue to play at the level that he had through the first two rounds of this postseason? 20 points in the first half for Julius Randle. He's splashing in threes from all over the place. But I felt like at half, Jeff, with OKC trailing by only four, I believe they were down by as much as eight or nine with a few minutes left in the second quarter. They go on a mini run at the end of the second. I thought it was really important to trim that deficit down because the way that Minnesota came out shooting the ball, the way that SGA and Jalen Williams both struggled in the first half, you felt like Minnesota should have been leading by a little bit more. You would have liked to have a bit more of a cushion because you knew OKC was going to get right in those final two quarters. That's exactly what happened. I mean, SGA goes 2 of 13 from the field with two turnovers in the first half. And both he and Jalen Williams, I thought, were excellent throughout the second, even if the dominant narrative coming out of this game, Jeff, is the whistle that SGA was getting, particularly in that second half.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, dominant narrative, you know, earned a little bit. You know, yes, SGA was getting the whistle. Yes, he was trying to get that whistle. He was foul baiting. And as you said, this is the same thing with Jalen Brunson against Detroit, most notably, where that became the priority.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, in general, I don't necessarily have a problem with these high free throw rate superstars because I think especially if you're a guard in the modern NBA, that's just kind of part of the game, right? It's like if you want to be pushing for 30 points per game, you have to play it, right? You have to do what Jalen Brunson's doing. You have to do what James Harden has been doing for so many years. And I think it's really difficult to throw stones at one specific player because a lot of elite players around the NBA embellish calls. And that includes Nikola Jokic, by the way, who they just faced in the previous round. Now, you know, I think Jokic, given his size, you know, he absorbs a lot more contact and it kind of evens out. But look, did it veer into egregious territory at times last night? No question. And to me, where I draw the line, Jeff, is when you are prioritizing getting the foul over making a basketball play, over getting a field goal attempt off. And there were a few of those possessions for SGA where clearly the goal was, look, I'm going to try to embellish this contact first, and then I'll just throw the ball up there. And if it goes in, great. If it's anywhere near the rim, that's fine. It just felt like there were a few too many of those possessions. And you know, you contrast that to somebody like Anthony Edwards, who I actually think doesn't do this. It's a rarity for a superstar guard, somebody of Anthony Edwards' ilk. He is not really a foul baiter. And maybe at some point in his career, he'll learn that he has to do that because that's how the game is played in the NBA. But look, either way, I think even if you take away all of SGA's free throw attempts, all of his made free throws last night, the Thunder still win this game by double digits. I don't think that's what decided the final result, but look, I mean, yeah, Jaden McDaniels fouling out of this game in 26 minutes. You know, I think it definitely changed the way Minnesota had to defend as the game went along. And I'll be very curious to see, does this carry over to game two, or does SGA hear this? Does the NBA hear this and say, look, we don't want this to be the narrative throughout the series?
Yeah. One other note that I thought is interesting, you know, especially against the Lakers, Rudy Gobert had a huge impact, had a pretty big impact against Golden State as well. No impact in this game. Didn't play at all in the fourth quarter.
No.
Did OKC just neutralize him? Did Minnesota self-neutralize? What happened here?
Yeah. Yeah, a little column A, a little column B. I think Gobert, especially at this point in his career, you know, the ship has long sailed on Gobert really being an impact player offensively. You know, whether it's been in Utah or Minnesota, right. You know, it's borderline comical to watch at times how far out of their way, you know, his teammates will go to not feed him the ball. Like, his job needs to be what it was at the end of that Lakers series, which is just spend almost all of your effort on the glass. And yeah, obviously play some defense mm-hmm. on the inside as well. But you are out there to exploit the one statistical weakness that OKC has, which is that they are not a great rebounding team. That was the case in the regular season. That's still the case in the postseason. They were out rebounded in that 7-game series against Denver in round two. And you just barely noticed that Gobert was out there, right? You know, I was not surprised when I checked the box score last night and saw, oh yeah, he only played 21 minutes, didn't play at all in the fourth quarter, because there was no impact. And I think once Minnesota started trailing, you know, midway through the third quarter, Chris Finch just realized we need offense out there. We need to find our way to claw into this lead. And Rudy Gobert is certainly not going to help us do that. Now, Minnesota won the math battle, Jeff, as far as three-pointers go. They took 51 threes in this game. But something we talked about yesterday is that this Timberwolves team has been prone to these wildly off shooting nights. And outside of Julius Randle going 5 of 6 from three, this was certainly one of those. I mean, 15 of 51 from beyond the arc as a team. And you contrast that to OKC and you say, oh wow, Thunder had a great shooting night. They shot 52%, excuse me, from beyond the arc. They only took 21 threes. They only had 8 3-point attempts in the first half, which I thought was interesting. I mean, they're not necessarily one of those teams that's going to put up 50 or 60 in a given night, but even by Thunder standards, this was really, really low volume. That's something I think probably comes around as this series goes along. But bottom line is, if you're Minnesota, you can't have Naz Reid going 1 of 11 from the field. Dante DiVincenzo can't go 3 of 14. No. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who had to play more minutes because of the foul trouble for McDaniels, he goes 3 of 11, 2 of 9 from beyond the arc. So this was not, it wasn't some heroic bench effort from OKC. You know, they got some good minutes out of Kenrich Williams, but it was really the Minnesota bench just not making open shots.
Yeah, you got to make open shots, period, and especially against OKC, because they're going to pressure you and force more turnovers than average. You're not going to get as easy looks. So when do get them, got to make them. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. We have 6 games going on in Major League Baseball right now. One is the conclusion of the suspended game from Monday from the Guardians and the Twins. A lot of rain up there. Last night was rained out as well. In that game, it's now 4-2 Twins. It was 2-1 Twins at the time of the suspension. Carlos Santana has since homered in this one. We're seeing Joe Ryan, who's normally a starter, come in and pick right up after where this game was. So they're going to use him in bulk for this game. Basically loses a start because of this there. Hopefully in your fantasy league, you didn't get, you know, kind of hosed by that a little bit there. But Twins are now up 4-2. They're through the 6. So Ryan might, if you had him for a weekly league, hey, great. You're probably still getting a win out of him and all that. So heads up on that. We have 5 other games that started today, including the Pirates up 2-1 on the Reds. Nick, it's now 25 straight games for the Pirates of 4 runs or less. However, they won 1-0 last night. 4th time this year that the Reds have lost a 1-0 game.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pirates have 4 1/3 more innings to try to get to 5 runs for the first time in basically a month. And this one has played out so far, much like we saw last night, just 8 total hits on the board. Brady Singer on the hill for the Cincinnati Reds this afternoon. He's through 4 2/3, 5 hits. Has walked 4 already, Jeff, up to 102 pitches. So would not be surprised if his day concludes here pretty quickly. And 3 strikeouts for Brady Singer. Milwaukee Brewers currently trailing the lowly Baltimore Orioles, by the way, 1-0 in the top of the 4th there. Jeff, I don't have much to say on this game specifically. It's Chad Patrick going up against Sagano. But you and I were talking about Jackson Churio this morning on SiriusXM. He does have a hit. Yeah. He's got a single in this game. But my goodness, man, it has been a rough month for Jackson Churio.
It really has. And it's the batting eye is just horrific so far. I think it's 5 walks versus 48 strikeouts so far this year. He got off to a bad start last year. He's taking it to a new low right now, 259 OBP, including that hit today. Marlins and the Cubs are tied 1-1. It was 14-1 yesterday. Cade Horton getting the start for the Cubs. struggling right now. He's lucky to allow just one run. He's allowed six hits and two walks, yet has allowed one run. No strikeouts so far there. So dodging all sorts of raindrops, one ground ball double play induced there as part of it. So something to watch there. And then finally, Detroit's up 2-0 on the Cardinals. Seattle and the White Sox are 0-0. Nick, I want to save a little time, though, talk a little football. The tush push will exist again after the vote to ban it went down short by a narrow margin.
It will exist as it should, in my opinion, Jeff. I was anti-ban the tush push. Look, I'm sympathetic to the idea that, you know, players pushing players from behind. Is it really a football play? Maybe not. But look, nothing is stopping other teams outside of the Philadelphia Eagles from taking advantage of this, right? It's kind of turned into this witch hunt where it's everybody against the Eagles. And I think it's interesting that this vote came down 22-10. It did not receive the 24 requisite votes in order to pass. So it's not like everybody is in full agreement here against Philly. And look, we've seen other teams try to integrate this. Nobody's been as consistently successful as the Eagles have, but yeah, you think of the Baltimore Ravens, they'll bring in Mark Andrews or Isaiah Likely, they kind of motion him in at quarterback and run a similar type of play. To me, the Eagles' ability to perfect this with Jalen Hurts is a skill. Jalen Hurts' ability to push forward, to push that pile, to use his strength, take those hits over and over, it's part of what makes him Jalen Hurts. It's part of what makes him one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. He has deficiencies elsewhere, but it's part of the package, right? And to me, if you can't stop it, you know, you find a way to do it yourself. So I was never in agreement on this ban, and I think it's a bad look, frankly, for the Green Bay Packers to be leading the charge on this.
Votes to ban quarterbacks doing squats were also did not pass as well. We're going to preview Eastern Conference Finals with Pacers and Knicks coming up next here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Quick baseball update. One game we didn't get to. Actually, great pitching matchup. Houston, Tampa Bay, Taj Bradley versus Hunter Brown. It's 2-2 in this one here. Actually, just went to 3-2 in favor of Tampa Bay over Hunter Brown right now. And that's interesting development there because Houston was a good road favorite in that one there. Isak Paredes homered for the second day in a row for the Astros. All right, Eastern Conference Finals begin tonight in New York. Pacers, Knicks. Excited about this one, Nick. Yesterday when we did it, our preview, we kind of gave short shrift to your player rankings. So we're going to start off this time with your player rankings and in order of the most important players in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, so in terms of methodology here, I mean, there's no debate who one and two are. It has to be Brunson and Halliburton in some order, right? If either of those guys have an all-time great series or a completely disappointing series, then it's going to shift the balance, no question. So I have Jalen Brunson, number one. I do feel like the Knicks are a little bit more dependent on Brunson even than the Pacers are on Tyrese Halliburton, although I did dig into some of the on-off court numbers for Halliburton. There's a 16-point swing in terms of net rating with Halliburton on versus Halliburton off in these playoffs. But you get beyond those top two, Jeff, that's where it becomes a little bit more interesting. And I went with Mikal Bridges as my number three most important player in this series. I debated Pascal Siakam for this spot. I debated Karl-Anthony Towns as well, maybe even an outside case for someone like OG Anunoby or Andrew Nembhard. But, you know, it's not a complete one-to-one if you just look through the box scores. But if you watch these games, like the general vibe of a New York Knicks game seems to swing on whether or not Mikal Bridges is involved, is engaged, is efficient on the offensive end. You know what you're getting from him every night defensively. And I think he's going to spend a lot of time on Tyrese Halliburton in this series. That's at least the matchup that they used most often during the regular season. But if Mikal Bridges is going 3 of 8 from the field tonight, I think there's a very good chance the Indiana Pacers walk into MSG and take game one. If Mikal Bridges hits 3 3-pointers and goes, I don't know, 7 of 11 from the field, then the Knicks probably win that game. Like, he is kind of their bellwether for them beyond what you're getting from Jalen Brunson. So I have Mikal Bridges at number three. Karl-Anthony Towns, I settled on at number four. So that's three Knicks in the top four, Jeff.
Yep.
You know, just Towns, like, to me ESPN has the ability.
Sorry to interrupt you. You're like my ESPN app. You're trolling me with these rankings here. No, just kidding.
No. We'll get to some rationale here. But look, Karl-Anthony Towns, we're not that far removed from Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, is he a top 10 to 15 player in the NBA discussions. Right. You know, I think we know there is more there for Karl Anthony Towns. Sometimes it's a question of Towns' level of effort, his level of engagement. Other times it's, you know, how much do the Knicks make a point to get him involved? I think this is a series where Karl Anthony Towns should be able to eat. You know, Miles Turner, in theory, is a, you know, the type of defender who can shadow him out to the perimeter. He can handle him inside. Pacers also foul at one of the highest rates in the NBA this season. That's carried over to the playoffs. Like, I think one advantage here for the New York Knicks is using Towns a little bit more, trying to get some of these guys in foul trouble, pound it inside against a Pacers team that does not have great reserve options at the five beyond Miles Turner. So I think this will be a very big series for Cat. Number five, Pascal Siakam. Siakam is the Pacers' leading scorer in these playoffs, Jeff. Obviously, Haliburton is their most important piece, but I think Siakam has maybe been their steadiest scoring presence game to game. The Pascal Siakam versus OG Anunoby battle, I think, ultimately could define this series. If Pascal Siakam could keep giving you 17 to 19 points per game, if he can do it fairly efficiently, again, I like Indiana to win the series. If OG Anunoby wins that matchup defensively, I think it could swing things toward New York. And then real quickly, the rest of the list got Andrew Nembhard at number six. Quietly, one of the great playoff performers in recent NBA history. Miles Turner at seven, OG Anunoby at eight. Just talked about him going up against Siakam. Aaron Nesmith at nine, and Josh Hart at number 10. I wanted to put Josh Hart a little bit higher, Jeff. Rebounding is going to be huge in this series. You know, Indy has not rebounded at a great rate. They're below 50% in terms of their total rebound percentage in the playoffs. And I can tell you right now, Josh Hart over 9.5 boards, Josh Hart double-double, it's going to be a popular prop for game one tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a popular thing anytime the Pacers and Knicks meet up together. And you've had plenty of Josh Hart rebound props in the past, too. It seems like we'll be mentioning Nebhard's name and we'll be mentioning Hart's name pretty much every time these two teams play. I feel like that's been something that's going to come up here quite often on this. One through story last time these two teams met was the respective depth of each team. You know, Tibbs is known for just playing his starters, running them into the ground. Here we are in the third series. We're in the conference finals. The Knicks are slightly deeper than they were last year, I'd argue. But still, the Pacers' depth is something that's been good at getting him there so far this year.
Yeah, no question. I think the Pacers are the deeper team. You could say that pretty confidently. You know, it depends what you're getting out of Mitchell Robinson, I guess. You know, is he going 6 for 6 at the free throw line? Is he hitting the Steph Curry night in a losing effort at the free throw line? We'll see. You know, Miles McBride is kind of the other guy that they trust off the bench. Campaign has really faded out of the rotation, but that's about it for the New York Knicks. And the Pacers, if they want, they could go 9-10 deep, you know, and I'll be curious to see if they do that to begin the series. I mean, early in that Cavs series, they were playing 10 guys in the first half of those first few games. And, you know, we saw Ben Mathurin get kicked out of, I think it was game 4 or 5 against the Cleveland Cavaliers, only played 11 minutes in the final game of that series. That's a card they can play. He's played really well against the Knicks this season. So the Pacers have more diversity. You know, if things are going wrong, if OG Anunoby is shutting down Pascal Siakam, I think the Pacers do have more pivots.
Indeed. How many games will this series go? What props do you like for tonight?
This is a 6 or 7 game series for sure. I would be shocked, you know, barring some sort of injury situation, if this is wrapped up in 5 games. I will say 7. You can get 7 games right now, plus 220. Either team to win in 7. 6 games, also fittingly, plus 220. You know, the over 5.5 games, if you want to take that, it's minus 170. You know, you're laying a decent amount of juice, but I'm pretty confident that we get to 6 or 7 games. Now, picking which team wins in 7 games to me is the more difficult task because, of course, that game 7 would be at Madison Square Garden. But look, I'm already on the record. I think the Pacers are the slightly better team. I mean, this is going to be as razor thin of a margin as we've seen in a playoff series in a long time to me, Jeff. Pacers to win this series in 7, to go to MSG and win that game 7, 7-1 right now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. In terms of props that I'm looking at for tonight, we talked about Josh Hart. Look, I'll follow the crowd on this one. Josh Hart double-double plus 125. Of course, had a triple-double in that closing game against Boston last Friday. He had double-doubles in all 3 regular season matchups against the Indiana Pacers. Looking at Andrew Nembhard over 1.5 threes tonight. Another one we can get at plus money. You know, both of these teams, and especially Indiana, allow a decent amount of wide open threes, but the Knicks allow about 38 three-point attempts per game, about 15 of those tend to be wide open. And again, I worry about Mikal Bridges shadowing Tyrese Haliburton. I worry about OG Anunoby shadowing Pascal Siakam. I think it is going to come down to the role players on the Indiana side tonight. So I think Nembhard gets there in terms of volume. And then OG Anunoby, we're going 3 for 3 here on plus money props, Jeff. Plus 145 over 2.5 threes. He's hit this in 7 of 12 playoff games so far. And again, both these teams allow plenty of threes. When I dug in on the numbers for Indiana, they particularly allow a high number of above the break three-pointers. So we're talking, you know, top of the key, extending to the wings. More than half of OG Anunoby's attempts in the playoffs have come from that range. So I think this could be a good night for him.
Yeah, we're going to talk even more threes coming up. But first, smarter bets start here and last all year with VSiN Pro. Right now, sign up on an annual subscription and get 14 months for just $1.99 when you use promo code PRO. That's 2 months extra free for less than 50 cents a day. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from the hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus full access to VSiN.com's analytics, betting trends, and expert breakdowns. Don't wait. Go to VSiN.com, subscribe, and use promo code PRO to lock in this offer. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, so we've been talking a little bit about all these wide open threes, and I think it's really interesting there that I think that's going to be the through line, and one of the big through lines in this series is, you know, who does better from beyond the arc? And to that point, who would you bet on to have the most three-pointers in this series, Halliburton or Brunson?
Yeah, I love this one. I love this one. Getting a little semi-exotic here. So both Brunson and Halliburton are listed at plus 220 to lead the series in made threes. Now, you look at the playoffs, Brunson's taken about 7.6 threes per game. Halliburton taken about 6.5. Brunson's shooting it more efficiently, 36% versus 33%. But in the three regular season matchups, Jalen Brunson took only 8 combined threes. Halliburton took 23 in those three games. Not sure how much that really matters. Two of those games came very early in the year, but still worth noting. You know, if you want to veer away from either of the short shots, I would lean Halliburton over Brunson, but you know, plus 220, not quite appealing enough for me. I'm more interested in some long shots here. OG Anunoby at plus 550. He has only 4 fewer makes in the playoffs so far than Jalen Brunson, only 10 fewer attempts, which is kind of crazy when you consider, you know, the difference in usage rate between those two players. Aaron Nesmith, also plus 550, leads the Pacers in made threes so far in the playoffs with 27, takes about the same number of threes per 100 possessions as Tyrese Halliburton. And then the real long shot here, Andrew Nembhard at 30-1. He has the same number of makes as Tyrese Halliburton in these playoffs. He's shooting 50% from beyond the arc. Volume wise, not really comparable. 6.5 attempts per 100 compared to about 9, 9.5 for Halliburton and Brunson. But he's 30-1 for a reason. He's capable of getting hot. Last 7 games, he's averaging over 2.5 makes per game. So if you're looking for a long shot here, I would look at Anunoby. I would look at Nesmith, and maybe just put a little sprinkle on Andrew Nembhard.
We like sprinkles. We're going to have Alex Berutha join us next. More preview of this Eastern Conference final.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network, Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson hanging out with you up to 3 p.m. Eastern. Got a great guest joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. One of our favorites, Alex Berutha, our senior NBA editor over at rotowire.com. You can check him out on Twitter at Berutha Alex. You can find all of his daily picks for us over at rotowire.com/basketball. Alex, we of course have one game one in the books. We got another game one that we'll preview and get your best bets for as we roll along. But what were your takeaways from what we saw last night? SGA foul baiting aside, OKC wins by 26 despite trailing by 4 at the half. You joined us on SiriusXM earlier this morning, and you said, you know, coming in, this felt like Thunder in 5, maybe Thunder in 6. Based on what we saw last night, if you had to give an updated series prediction, what would it be?
I'll still stick with Thunder in 6, give them some benefit of the doubt. I think Minnesota, we've seen Minnesota come out flat now in 2 starts of the series. I mean, against Golden State as well, they came out really nervous, I felt like. And I didn't feel like they were necessarily nervous for this game. I mean, they played a great first quarter and great first half against OKC. But then OKC just found, like, they just found a different level of energy. They found a different level of defense. They were just taking the ball from players on Minnesota with 2 hands. It was kind of ridiculous. And I mean, Julius Randle, it were it not for some Julius Randle sort of like first half heroics, this score could have been way, way uglier. And I think Minnesota as much as they have, you know, through the entire play, they need Anthony Edwards to step up a little bit more. And Oklahoma City was doing a great job of making them take tough shots or barely even letting him get off a shot in the first place. But they just need to find ways to get him free for looks.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, like, there was some talk about Minnesota only turning it over 17 times, but it was the nature of the turnovers, the immediate turnaround that the Oklahoma City did. And if you're not making your shots and you're giving up these easy buckets, it's a tough way to live.
Yeah, the live ball turnovers, those are the ones that are killer.
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about a different team, like in Golden State, for example, is a high turnover team, but a lot of times they would just throw the ball out of bounds and it wouldn't result in a transition opportunity.
Yep.
Oklahoma City does a great job of again, just taking the ball from guys and pressuring them in the middle of the floor. And you mentioned it. I mean, one thing when you're Minnesota, you want to try to beat Oklahoma City on the boards, right? By having Gobert and Julius Randle and Jaden McDaniels and guys like that crash under the basket. But if they're going under the basket and then the turnover happens in the middle of the floor, they're all the way back. Mm-hmm. On defense, you know, in transition. So it's a tough line to walk, but Minnesota is not going to be able to turn the ball over 17 times in the series of game and win the series.
31 points off turnovers last night for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I thought OKC was a little sloppy too. I mean, they turned it over 15 times, but that resulted in just 10 points for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I know I said I didn't want to talk about the foul baiting, Alex, and I don't, but we kind of have to. I'm going to spin it this way, though. I'm not going to ask you to do a soliloquy on, you know, how we officiate SGA. I'm going to ask you, though, do you think the officiating changes at all? Because we know how things work in the NBA. When public sentiment maybe swings one way, things can be influenced. You know, based on the reaction, essentially the universal reaction coming out of game one, do you think we see a different whistle in game two? And would that affect the way that you bet game two?
Maybe slightly. I think Minnesota, first of all, just needs to come out and play really physical defense right off the bat, because I think referees tend to officiate a game based on the energy of both teams right out of the gate. If both teams come out of the gate playing really intense physical defense, they're just not going to call as much ticky-tack stuff. And so I think Minnesota almost counterintuitively needs to play harder on defense to start the next game and just kind of set a precedent. And maybe SGA gets to the free throw line less, certainly possible. Took 14 attempts in game one. On the other hand, I mean, he was getting to the rim a lot more than he had earlier in the playoffs. I thought Minnesota did kind of a bad job. He also missed a lot of layups at the rim. He missed like three or four layups.
Oh, yeah.
So those are going to go in. He's obviously a great mid-range jumper. He doesn't need those fouls. So I don't know if it would change the way I would bet. It certainly would not make me take an under on SGA points prop, for example. I wouldn't go that far.
Knicks Pacers tip off tonight to start the Eastern Conference final. Knicks are favored by 4.5. The total is 222.5. Before we get into the player props, do you have an opinion on the side or the total?
So I like the Pacers to win the series. I'm not sure I necessarily like 4.5. I wish the number was a little longer than 4.5 for me to take the Pacers with confidence. I will say on the total, I don't mind the over, partially because both of these teams actually have a tendency to foul defensively. And if you get into the bonus really early, obviously that racks up the score. And Indiana loves to get out and run. I trust their offense a lot. So I think I would lean over here, and I would... If you made me, I'd take Pacers plus 4.5 because I like them in the series, but I have stronger feelings on the over.
All right, what about the prop market tonight, Alex? I know you're looking at Nembhard, you're looking at Miles Turner, and you got something on Josh Hart.
I am just going to keep going back to the well like Andrew Nembhard until they stop me. Over 17.5 points plus assists. He basically only doesn't hit this when there's a blowout. Per 36 for the playoffs, he's averaging 16 points and 7 assists. So clearing this mark easily, and I know he's shooting above his head. He's shooting 51% from the field, 50% from three, and like 89% from the free throw line. Numbers that are not sustainable for Nembhard. But he's also still taking, I think, 13 true shot attempts a game. It's not like he's, you know, out there shooting 70% or something like that. And we know how involved Nembhard is for Indiana. A lot of times looks like their second best player offensively over Pascal Siakam. So I'm just going to keep riding that until it starts not hitting at a significant rate. And then for Miles Turner, over 6.5 rebounds, finding a good like sample for the series during the regular season was not easy. I mean, they basically only played one time in which the teams were fully healthy. But Turner did average 6.5 rebounds in 31 minutes in two games that these two teams played. But the Knicks shot 52% in those games. I think that will come down. So I think there'll be more rebounds available for Turner, who has started rebounding a lot better in the postseason after Brooke Lopez got phased out in the first series against the Bucks, and he was standing out on the perimeter on defense.
Good note by you on Andrew Nembhard, by the way. I'm with you. I'm going to keep riding it. I like his points tonight. He is second in NBA history in career playoff three-point percentage, just chasing the ghost of somebody named Bob Hansen, who I've never heard of. Rui Hachimura, by the way, third in career postseason three-point percentage. So maybe take that with a grain of salt. We'll have more from Alex in a moment. But first, start your day with an edge and with a game plan. The VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast is your first look at the day's betting lines, sharp action, and market movement. In just 15 minutes, you'll get everything you need to make smarter wagers and stay ahead of all the line moves, all before your morning coffee is gone. It's hosted by VSiN's team of trusting betting experts. The Daily Morning Bets podcast is fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. Listen to the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast wherever you get your pods, or you could, of course, get it on the VSiN Watch app. The sharpest way to start your betting day is the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast.
Alex, if I know you at all, you've got some sort of exotic prop for tonight, whether it's a steal prop or a backup point guard block pop prop. What do you got for me? Can I interest you in like a Miles McBride over a half a steal prop? What do you got for me there?
That sounds good, actually. I you know what? I didn't find as many for this game as I did like in OKC at like Jalen Williams over a steal and a half. That would make me look really good if we had me on to do that. I will say I was looking through some of the series player props. And I know you guys in the previous segment mentioned the threes for the series prop. You can get Josh Hart to lead the series in rebounds at 5-1. Interesting to me. I mean, Cat has been a really good rebounder in the playoffs so far. I think he's averaging like 12 a game or something like that. But I am not 100% sure on are they going to have Cat out on the perimeter dealing with Miles Turner? You know, how much is he going to be out there shooting threes? How are the rebounds going to be available? And obviously, we know Josh Hart, excellent rebounder, and I don't necessarily trust anybody on Indiana to average 9 or 10 rebounds a game as much as I do like Turner tonight to go over 6.5. So I will say Josh Hart to lead the series in rebounds at 5-1, I think is pretty solid value.
All right, Alex, we got about 30 seconds. We'll finish with this. I know you are on record that you have the Indiana Pacers winning this series, as I do. Have you struggled with the fact that if you think this is going to go 6 or 7 games, it may require the Pacers to win a game 7 at Madison Square Garden? So how many games do you have Indiana finishing this out in?
It was pretty close for me, so I would say probably 7. I just Indiana to me is a team that's they're just not afraid, man. They come in with so much confidence, maybe almost too much confidence, but I kind of love it. And I don't think that they'll be afraid to go into Madison Square Garden in a game 7 and get things done if they have to.
All right, there we have it. I'm riding with you, Alex. Pacers to win this series in 7-1 right now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Alex Barutha, everybody, check him out on Twitter, at Barutha Alex. He joined us via the Progressive Guest Line. We give you Major League Baseball updates. We give you all of Jeff Erickson's best bets coming up next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Dick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you, talking baseball as we bring you home. Taking you up to 3 p.m. Eastern. We got Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. He's back in the chair. Should be a fun show. Should be a fun rest of the day here on VSiN. Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard. That's coming up at 4 p.m. Eastern. And of course, VSiN Primetime with Scott Seidenberg coming up at 7. Tell you what's going on around Major League Baseball. We have plenty of day game action. Guardians Twins, we're in the bottom of the eighth in a game that began on Monday, is now resuming. Twins leading that one 5-2. Those teams will play again scheduled to start in about 15 minutes, Jeff. I don't think that's going to be the case. We have to push that one back a little bit, but that is game one of kind of a makeshift doubleheader. Orioles Brewers still 1-1. We're now in the top of the sixth there, just four hits on the board for each team. We're in the bottom of the seventh between the Reds and the Pirates. Pittsburgh leading that one 2-1. Top of the sixth between the Cubs and the Marlins. Cubs, of course, put 14 on this Marlins team last night. 1-1 again in the top of the sixth. Tampa Bay Rays have opened up a 5-2 lead over the Astros. We're in the bottom of the sixth there. Three homers on the board for the Rays. Josh Lowe, Brandon Lau, Curtis Meade, all with solo shots. A couple other games in action. Tigers leading the Cardinals 3-0. And the Seattle Mariners up 3-0 on the Chicago White Sox, thanks to a three-run home run from one Julio Rodriguez. All right, Jeff, we'll get to your plays for the late slate in a little bit here, but we got a lot of people watching who may be new when it comes to sports betting, especially maybe dabbling in Major League Baseball. I want to ask you, what kind of props or plays are you targeting if you would recommend to somebody who's just getting into betting baseball? You know, any specific type of plays, pitching versus hitting, anything like that?
Good question. And first of all, I'll say betting baseball is hard. You know, it's you think there's some simple lines here. You think I'll just do this obvious thing, and it doesn't really work out that way. Baseball is a long sport, long haul sport, and you think you know certain things, and you don't. If the usually like what is the book thinking? They've usually got that covered. I also want to be really transparent here. You know, I don't get a chance to bet baseball that often. I live in California, don't have a legal market to bet it there. So I can advise many things. We can do like prize picks, we can do underdog and do nature's things like that. But I'm advising things. I don't sell picks. So I just want to be clear about that. I think the best way to start is keep it simple. Do money lines, maybe tie two different money lines together if you're looking to find some plus odds or get a better payout there. Don't try to take the wild swings too often. Try to kind of build a bankroll, do simple bets first. We do talk about a wide range of bets here, but find your lane. Become an expert in a narrow topic. You know, whether it's a certain team, maybe it's just starting pitchers. You want to focus on that. You know, become an expert first in something before you try to kind of go all over the board. I think it'd be overwhelming the number of different options you can have, the number of different players you can bet on there.
You're right about that. I think that was great, man. And there's a reason that my best bet every day comes from the NBA and not Major League Baseball, because yeah. It's tough. It is tough. It's a lot of players to keep track of. Everything's happening every single day. What tools do you use when you're diving in to give us your plays every day?
Well, first of all, the channel here at VSiN and VSiN.com, RotoWire, obviously wearing the shirt. One fun fact. Make sure if you're advising to use a hitter and a hitter prop, make sure he's in the active lineup, the starting lineup first. We have our daily lineups page at RotoWire. It's really invaluable there. I advised Jake Bowers the other day against Dean Kramer, and Bowers wasn't even the starting lineup. So make sure that he's in there first before you do any sort of thing like that, especially on down ballot guys like that. You're trying to find those plus odds. Other sources I use Fangraphs on the regular. I think they're fantastic for data. My friend Paul Spohr does a great starting pitchers chart there. Also, we've seen Paul on this channel a lot. Baseball Savant is fantastic. Metrics I'm using quite often. I look for WRC+. I look for WOBA. I look for K percentage and walk percentage a lot. Don't look for straight up ERA. I mean, it can be helpful. We cite it sometimes, but try to dig a little deeper. Not just merely strikeouts, but strikeout percentage. Knowing how often that teams do that, especially on the team standpoint there. I would also advise trying to look for rolling averages. Don't just look at, especially when we get deeper into the season. You know, we now have 2 months of sample essentially here, almost 2 months. Instead of just looking at season long, maybe you want to sell, filter for the last 30 days. That's something else you might want to dive into a little bit there. The first thing I usually look at are starting pitching matchups. Then I kind of go into the team hitting trends after that. And knowing where those hitting trends have been established earlier, like a fun point, Reds had a pretty good road hitting stats for a while there early in the season. And that's because they had a 3-game road trip where they went to Baltimore, Miami, and Colorado. Three of the worst starting pitching staffs in baseball, Max Meyer notwithstanding. Know how these stats are built up before you fully rely on them.
Great stuff, man. Great stuff. And look, if you want to become a VSiN subscriber, you heard it earlier in the show, VSiN.com/subscribe. Go check out all the great tools there. The betting splits are incredible. So much information at your fingertips. And if you want to subscribe to RotoWire, just go to RotoWire.com, put in that code ROTO15 at checkout, 15% off any of our subscription plans. All right, let's get to the late slate, Jeff. We still got plenty of action coming our way this evening. Royals are on the road at the San Francisco Giants. Giants, big favorites on the money line, -205, total sitting at 7.5. This is Daniel Lynch the fourth, a left-hander going up against Logan Webb.
Yeah, Lynch used to be a pretty big prospect drafted at the University of Virginia. Struggled as a starter in his professional career, though, especially at the major league level. This is his first start of the year. He's been pitching out of the bullpen with Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans on the IL. The Royals have had to go elsewhere. And this is probably not going to be a deep start for Lynch. Nonetheless, I kind of like, you want to look at what the Giants are doing against lefties. They are considerably worse against lefties. 288 WOBA, 83 WRC plus, 24.5% K percentage. Lynch does put this to the test. As I said, probably doesn't go super deep into this game, but I think that kind of does tamp down the score a little bit there. Meanwhile, Hayden Birdsong had a nice debut last night as a starter. That is 5 shutout innings, but that means 4 innings in the out of the bullpen. So I think Logan Webb, who's a horse anyhow, probably goes deeper into this game. So the line I like, instead of trying to go -205 on a money line, I'm going to go Webb over 19.5 outs recorded at -120. I kind of like the under, which is at 7.5. It was originally at 7 at -122. You get that extra hook there. I'll take that.
It's a Jacob DeGrom night for the Texas Rangers. They're on the road at Yankee Stadium. Yankees slight favorites on the money line, -118. Texas, -102. Low total, as you'd expect, with DeGrom out there. He goes up against the lefty, Ryan Yarbrough. What do you like in this game?
Yeah, Rangers bats continue to struggle, and they're just as bad against lefties as they are righties almost now. 277 WOBA, 25.4% K percentage against lefties. So, you know, I don't know if Yarbrough goes deep. It's similar to Lynch in that respect. The max inning so far for Ryan Yarbrough is 5 innings. So it might be tough. I wanted to try to find a Yarbrough strikeout prop, but it's tough. DeGrom's rolling. He's won 4 in a row. I think this is one where they keep it close. I kind of like the under in this one. And I think you're getting a decent payout on a Jacob DeGrom money line at -102. I think we have to take it.
All right. Before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the night, Jeff, which I will give a little tip off here. They're both coming from the NBA. Tell us what you like in Mets, Red Sox. This is Tyler McGill going up against Garrett Crochet.
Not sure if you saw Walker Buehler's ejection yesterday. That was pretty funny. Clearly missed the call, but Buehler lost his head too. So lost his mind, got ejected. Bullpen had to carry a huge load in this one there. So I think Crochet goes deep into this game. I like the over 18.5 outs recorded. On the other side for McGill, he's pitching for his bullpen, for his rotation life. One good note, 29% K percentage, and Red Sox strikeout a decent amount against righty. So I like the over 5.5 Ks from McGill. I think the Red Sox win this one, but I think it's a pretty high price to pay in the money line. So I'm going to avoid that one.
Yeah, our guy Eric Halterman had a good tweet last night after the Walker Buehler ejection, saying that in a situation like that, the call should go to a review, and if the ump is wrong, then he gets ejected. I am on board with Eric Halterman's thoughts on that one. All right, it's time for our G-Bank best bets of the night. They're brought to you by G-Bank, and you can get the G-Bank Visa Signature card today. Most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances, even when you put your own money on the card. But GBank treats gaming transactions as purchases. So you're saving 3 to 5% on cash advance fees on gaming transactions right there. Also, with GBank, you're earning 1% cashback rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions, plus 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. You can apply now over at vsin.com/GBank. That's vsin.com/GBank. Jeff, your best bet of the night. Where are we going?
I'm tailing smart people like you and Alex and JVT before us and money moves as well. Pacers Knicks over 5.5 games, -170 for the series.
All right, there we go. I like it. I'm going to Andrew Nembhard. Talked about it earlier in the show. Alex likes the over on the points plus assists. I'm just going points here. Over 12.5 points, -105. I think the Pacers keep this game very competitive, if not win outright. Siakam's got to deal with OG. Halliburton's got to deal with Bridges. Role player's going to have to step up tonight for the Indiana Pacers, and Nembhard has cleared this number in 7 of his last 10. That's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of Prop Points. Keep it locked right here on VSiN. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.